This podcast is sponsored by PICC, Florida's leading public adjusters for 22 years of handling residential commercial claims in Florida. Dealing with an insurance company when having a property loss can be discouraging. Let PICC encourage you and maximize your compensation. Please call us at 305-956-3666.
Rabbi, welcome. I'm so happy to have you here. I have the honor of here of having Rabbi Silverman. He happens to be the rabbi of the Harbor Island Synagogue, not only the rabbi of the Harbor Island Synagogue, but he's a personal rabbi of mine, and he's definitely made a tremendous impact with me and my kids and my wife. And I think there's no better guest to have here on the subject of parenting. You've done a tremendous job in the community. The community really, really loves you, and the harmony that you've created in the community, which is so difficult to do nowadays, to have such unity in the community. I said, I have to have you on, and I have to share you with the world, even though I know you don't like to be shared. You're very private. But we decided to have you on for a podcast, and we're going to ask you, Rabbi, we're going to ask you a lot of questions about parenting. And we have a lot of young fathers and young mothers, and we all need help on parenting. Definitely, this is today we see teenagers, it's such a crisis today. And anything we can get help on parenting, especially, you know, parents going through divorces, et cetera, we really want to get your opinion, especially me. And this is more for me also. And thank you for coming here, Rabbi.
Thank you, Gedalia, for having me. I'm really only doing this for you, as you know. My yes. First time ever recording live in a recording studio. Usually I'm used to standing at a podium speaking to people. Correct. And this is my first time. But for you, Gedalia, absolutely. I went out on a limb, and I readily agreed. So I hope something good and positive will come from it anyway.
But again, the rabbi's teachings are based on Chabad Chassidus. And again, Rabbi has written a book. A few books, right? You're working on a second book. What's the name of your first book, Rabbi?
Eternal Values.
Eternal Values. Beautiful. And your wife also, we have to give the wife a compliment also, right? The wife says, you didn't mention my name. Your wife also both of you have made such an impact on our lives, me and my wives, and we're just completely grateful to have you. So Rabbi, I really want to ask you some questions, some of the questions that I get asked. Obviously, I have a 14-year-old and young kids, so I don't have these questions, the answer to some of these questions that I'm sure you have. And I want to start really, really, what's the first step really, really, and why do we need a rabbi to teach us how to raise children?
Right. I mean, a good self-help book could do the
trick. Why do we need a rabbi?
So really, what's a rabbi doing sitting in here? And that's an excellent question, a good starter. And I think, in my humble opinion, and I want to suggest, actually, is an answer to that question, that there is something very unique in Jewish tradition, something very unique in the Jewish point of view about how to raise a child that sets it totally apart from the normal, useful, very, very good, insightful self-help books that are out there for parents. Parenting, as I always say, there are two jobs, the most important jobs in the world, that we're faced with in life. And for both these two jobs, which are the most important, have effect for generations, we are never trained for them. And that is number one, marriage, and number two, parenting.
You said that.
Yes. So, yes, and we all of us are in need of guidance and help. But there is something unique about the Jewish point of view and the Torah, Jewish tradition, that makes it actually a totally different undertaking. And I think in a nutshell, to make it very, very to the point and succinct, there is a very big difference in the love that parents have for the child, depending on what it's based on. Most parents' love for their child is is biological. It's based on the fact that a man and woman have a child together, and they love that child because the child came from them. The Jewish tradition has a different point of view. The love that parents have for their child is not a biological love so much as it's a love because the child came from God. The Talmud says there are actually three partners in the creation and conception of every child. There's the mother, the father, and there is God. The mother gives the substance of the child. The father dictates what kind of a Jew the child will be, grow up to be, and God gives the essence. And there's three facets to every human being, three facets to every child. And therefore, really, the way that Jewish parents should be looking at their educational or upbringing duties, so to speak, if you want to call it that, or the joy, the mission of bringing up the child is, God entrusted me a part of himself. This child has a soul, which is a part of God. And therefore, he's entrusted me with a part of him, so to speak, to raise and bring to the world. And I think the key, therefore, based on that, and this is really the key to it all, every parent has to feel and believe and understand that they're raising royalty.
Mm, beautiful.
Your child is royal. They're noble. They're unique. They're special. They're a part of God. And I think with this, for example, I remember when I always trained my children, just a personal anecdote, I always made them believe or tried to brainwash them. You're royal, wow. You're special. In fact, my sons-in-law, who I get very hard time for, they actually managed to marry my daughters, they, to get back at me, once they were married in the family, they started off a family blog, a family chat on WhatsApp. It's called The Royal Silvermans, but my sons-in-law made it. So wow, can we join too? So I told my children, my daughters, especially when they were meeting boys, I said, I just feel bad for you. You've got to marry a commoner, but that's okay. You're all right. So anyway, I did in a humorous way. I gave them this feeling that actually they have that spiritual specialness to them, as every Jewish child has. Based on this, every parent really in the end is therefore not an owner of your children. You don't own your children. They're not your possessions. Mm. Like these car stickers, my child scored X or right, something, right. Did X, Y, Z on the right. Basketball game. You don't, you wear it like a badge of pride. We, of course, are proud of our children, but we don't own them. What actually, we are facilitators. That's the key word. We were given the merit to facilitate the growth of a child of God. And this gives you a totally different experience with bringing up your children. This gives you tremendous, your child belongs to God. And therefore, you have a mission in life. It's a joyful mission. It's children who are brought up by parents who express and feel the joy of the privilege of bringing up his children have a totally different way, perhaps, of interrelating with their children. So
that's incredible.
This leads to another very, the first thing that this leads to, and sort of there's a progression of these things, every child, if they're brought up by parents with this attitude, will gain a personal feeling of self-esteem and competence. They come together, actually.
Which is huge, which makes up the whole psyche.
Because the feeling of intrinsic worth that you give your children because of this outlook, intrinsic worth feeds into self-esteem, healthy self-esteem, and competence. And based on this, then, as a follow-on, all the things that the self-help books normally give you guidance on, compliance. We all want the same thing. We want children that are good, do well at school. They're compliant and they're sensible, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All these things come as a natural progression from this. I remember myself personally, I was very, very blessed with the kind of children that God gave me. I was very grateful, but I feel that my children mirrored in their upbringing. They mirrored this attitude. Beautiful. Of yeah.
I mean, the royalty example is a really phenomenal example. I mean, just because you working in addictions and seeing how many of us had, not the best parenting, because obviously just like if the parent can only give what he has. So if the parent doesn't feel royalty, he'll never think that his child is royalty. So this is it's never
so this is so the important. First big step, which really is not in the self-help books again, but something that Jewish tradition has to bring it. That's the very foundation of all Jewish parenting. I would add to that, by the way, we know the famous story with Avraham by the Akedah, when he's going to just about to slaughter Isaac. And the angel calls out, Avraham, Avraham, stop. We're only joking. We don't really mean it. Just a test. So why did he call it Avraham, Avraham twice? So at that moment, there was a different Avraham. Each of us actually is two of us. Avraham and Avraham, at that moment, we are actually what we are. And at that moment, he expressed and lived his potential. Hmm. We all of us have great potential. And at that moment, he fulfilled his potential, having passed that test. So they called out him, Avraham that you are regularly, and the Avraham that you really are deep inside. Well, that's who we're talking to as well. And that gives the child the feeling that they have this great potential. And it gives them a feeling.
So how do you discipline love and discipline? How do you measure those? How do you work with those?
Okay, obviously there's a balance. There's love and there's discipline.
Because obviously he's royalty, but he still needs discipline. Correct.
So that's an excellent question and a natural corollary and a follow-on from what we just said, what we just spoke about. I'll give you an example. I myself never, ever had to discipline my children. God forbid never to raise a hand on a child. I never even had to wag my finger. What did I used to do? Based on this idea of your royalty, whenever my children, I saw them doing something which is not appropriate, not right, wrong, whatever, what I used to do was I used to make a face like this. I don't know if you can see it. Oh, come on. This is not for you. You're above this. This is not.
Wow.
That's all I had to do. In other words, I didn't say, you can't do this. This is not for you.
You're better than this.
Yeah, you're much better than this. This is not for you.
That's great.
Somebody once asked me, what would you do, though, if you're, your children are compliant. What would you do if you're, let's say, one of your sons came home one day and he's from the yeshiva and he tells you, I want to be a guitarist in a drummer in a rock band, and I'm going to go away from home for 5-6 years and live on a mountain and travel around America with the band. What would you do? And I answered this person. I said, if I would tell my son, if you can convince me that this is the right thing to do, and it fulfills your potential, and it's the best use of your abilities, then I would give them my blessing.
Wow.
But it has to be in others. The discipline is this good for you? Ask it. Think. It's not just me and you. It's about you want to do this, and I want, as your parent, I want you to do this. So we've got right away a confrontation there. So I find, is this in your really best interest? Is this really good for you? And are you? I have one of my children was. One of my daughters was a little bit more the party type, and she had this thing going back many years ago now when we lived in Miami Beach. Every Saturday night, she drove already, so she wanted to go out and drive to a local, there's only actually one kosher restaurant in Miami at that time.
I remember.
Sarah's Pizza Sauce, whatever it was. She wants to go there Saturday night. She's a fun person. She loves life. So my wife and I we didn't let. My wife gets told, well, you know, there's a lot of drunk driving on Saturday night. So my daughter's very clever. She answers back, you think all the drunk drivers are lining up outside the house? Wait, Normie's there. Let's go for it.
Right.
Chase her. So anyway, it was, she said, you're ruining my life. And I explained, I want you to think. I want you to think if this is really where you should be on a Saturday night, because there's a lot of, you're youngster, you're 16 years old or young, 15, 16 years old. And there's a lot of mixing of teenagers, perhaps above your age there as well. I think if this is really where you want to be, whatever. Anyway,
we should have only had that issue back then.
Yeah, right.
Imagine
bottom
today,
line is, it was only after when she got married, she thanked my wife. I want to thank you for guiding me on that path. She realized then it was the right thing to do. So in other words, there is a way of disciplining. You get them to think about it.
Right.
What's the word in it for them? So certainly discipline, but the main thing is because you don't really need so much disciplinary pressure when the children senses you're bringing them up with a sense of joy for the mission you're entrusted with. There's nothing more important than me bringing you up. All other issues, matters go to the side about, and they feel this, that nothing is more important to you as the parent than bringing them up and guiding them and helping them grow. And you do it with joy, you have no problems. At least I found this in my experience.
So it's I guess there has to be a united front from the parents, because let's say, for example, the parents are fighting all the time, then that message is probably not be so effective.
Well, if there's a difference of opinion, this can be a big problem. If there's a difference of opinion between, let's say, the mother and the father about the level of Judaism or practice or outlook,
which is very common.
For the sake of the children, it's very important to try and find common ground. On the contrary, if actually the parents, perhaps the mother and the father, if they have differences about this, would discuss it and talk about it, find some common ground for the sake of the child and the child. Because to get mixed messages is not, my parents haven't got one voice on this.
Right,
it's not, I wouldn't say confusing, but it is confusing for a child. But even more than that, it already in the, it's cracking his inner sense of being and rock. It's an anchor. It's not a good thing at all. So for the sake of the child, there should be a common voice. In other words, the difference of philosophy, of outlook between the mother and the father in Judaism should not be acted out in the arena of the child's upbringing. So there should be a way where, usually if parents have goodwill to each other,
right,
and they love both of them love their children very, very much beyond the differences of opinion, they will not want to act out their differences in these things by using the children as gladiators in this arena. They would want much more to have
there's just tremendous challenges in this area. I mean, I went through a divorce and obviously we weren't on the same page originally one of our daughters. And there's a tremendous challenge.
There are two issues. Yeah, there is the issue of the personal relationship of the parents.
Correct.
And the kid. Of Judaism.
Yeah.
So the Judaism, I say, should be one voice. But coming now to, you mentioned divorce, coming now to personal harmony. One of the most important things for a child in a functional household is to see, believe it or not, that the parents can have fun with each other. They're happy. They're happy with each other,
right,
and they can have fun together. You know, the same example that, one of the children, you're babysitting tonight, mom and dad, we're going out for a date. We're going on a date. We've been married for 15 years. We're going on a date. We're having fun. Children like to see this.
Sure.
Children like to see this. They like to see that the parents enjoy each other, that they have fun together, and they have discussions with each other. And it gives a child a sense of a steadiness, serenity, and solidness. And therefore, there's really, as far as they're concerned, there's one voice in the house. So yes, and for if so, in other words, if there are differences which make problems in the harmony between the husband and the wife, as much as possible, the children should not suffer from right. such differences. Adults were wise enough to get married, and God forbid they have to get divorced, but they should do it outside of the arena of the children. And if that happens, the child should be, and the child becomes aware of it, I would imagine the best thing to do is make the child feel, listen, Daddy and I, or Mummy and I, we are still getting on to each other, talking, and you explain to them about being married or something. There has to be a way, in other words, to make the child feel it's not the end of the world. It is the end of the world, but it's not the end of the world. In any case, yes, you'd have to put enough.
I mean, because you could see today the majority of therapy today is definitely healing the inner child, and I think David Lieberman always says a great line: "It's never too late to have a happy childhood." That means at the end of the day, the you were not the your mother wasn't able to give, your father wasn't able to give, but you can at least get past that. But it does affect tremendously, yes. And I see people today and. They're basically mirroring their parents' behavior.
And unfortunately, this goes intergenerational, and it goes on and on through the generations. And one of the, what you do for the sake of the children, which is really in the end the most important mission that you have in your life, to make it not, the pain you've suffered and gone through, people have gone through, should not be mirrored and expressed into their children or projected into their children. One of the ways around doing that, besides, I said, the projecting a joyful parenting attitude, besides that, I think also it's very, very important that to treat them like adults. In other words, for example, I never spoke baby language to my children, even when they were very, very young. I always treated them, spoke to them as adults, and that gave them also a feeling that they were on a certain par with me. Oh my! For example, the Shabbat table, I would ask my children, so what's your opinion about such and such a topic, something of the news, maybe? And, my father wants to hear from me. And it trains them to think. It makes them feel the value. And the same thing is when you have this trauma going on, perhaps between a husband and a wife, and it becomes intergenerational and they project it, the way to not project this is to discuss different things with the children. In other words, the child should have an island of their own in which they're brought up, and you discuss different issues with them. You show them you value their opinion. So you have two personas. You have a persona that is between the wife and the husband, so to speak, if they're not getting on, unfortunately. But much more important than that is the persona that you project to your children. So they should be insulated as much as possible from that. But certainly, they do say hurt people.
Hurt
each people,
correct.
Unfortunately, and that's something that we have to learn on the job.
You have to learn it. Yeah.
Am I hurting my child? Am I hurting my wife, my husband, whatever? Hurt people. Hurt. I mean, in other words, why am I doing this? Because I was hurt myself. But why is that a reason to continue it? So I'm the one that is given the job to pick up the pieces but stop it.
How important today is to teach? Rabbi Rush always says that if you give a kid if you have faith. And you give a kid an iPhone, you'll still catch him. But if he doesn't have faith, you don't teach the kid emunah, you give him an iPhone, you lost him. So how important is to teach the fundamentals of even how to get up? You know, things are going to happen. There's no, everybody has some kind of trauma in their life. And the importance of raising resilient children is so, I think,
resilience
so key.
In a marriage is very important. Resilience. Marriage guidance or marriage therapists, certainly Orthodox world, I've heard from them. They all say resilience is a key word.
Correct.
And that brings us actually, and resilience for children, one of the most important gifts. I know if I had my father and mother back again, they've long passed from this world, but if I had them back again, I would want one thing from them today, and that is, I don't think you taught me enough how to deal with problems.
Wow.
You had great expectations from me, and I hope I lived up to some of them.
I think you did, Rabbi.
not quite the way my mother perhaps thought, but anyway, she always wanted me to be an eye surgeon or a brain surgeon. That didn't quite work out. But in any case, I think the idea of your parents teaching how to deal with the problems of life, and this actually is there's a very, very good technique how to instill this in your children. And this technique is based on a very, very simple but profound idea, and that of paying compliments. You know, today, especially in the world today, self-esteem is very, very important. So one of the ways that we get stressed a lot, and one of the ways people say you should get to it is, how do you reach that? Give your child self-esteem? Compliments. Everybody loves compliments. That's right. The way to get somebody's right inside somebody. Compliments. There are good compliments, and there are bad compliments. Compliments actually, by the way, belong from God. It says when God created the world, he says he created the heavens, the earth, the sun, the moon, the stars, whatever. And after everything he created, he stood back, so to speak, and he looked and said, you know, you're good. V'yalakim kitov, he saw it was good. He paid it. Well, everything God makes
is good. He paid a compliment to man, you're saying.
Man, to everything. He's teaching us, but man is, he's teaching us a lesson. It's not just enough. You have to learn the art. God could pay us a compliment when he created us. He said, I've created you. You're not just raw material. I'm telling you, you're good. I'm telling you. Part of being a human being is believing in yourself. For me, the world was created, the Talmud says. What does that mean? I believe in myself that God thought it worthwhile. The world could not exist without me in the world. I'm needed. I have a valuable job to do.
Right.
And this parents can give by giving compliments, but there are good compliments and negative compliments. If we tell our children, oh, you're the best, you're brilliant, you're smart, all the time, that's all they hear, we're actually doing them a big disfavor in a way.
Right.
Because we're making them, they're going to be grow up, quite likely, it's quite probable, they'll grow up to be risk averse. Why? Because they have a fixed mindset, because they will be frightened, they'll be fearful of anything new and trying anything, taking any risks. Okay. Because maybe it won't work out, and if it doesn't work out, people see that I'm not as great as I'm made out to be. So it's they'll have a fixed mindset. On the other hand, if you train a child that, yes, you did make a mistake, but you know what? Let's analyze it. Let's see. What can we learn from this? And it's okay to make mistakes. You're giving them a very good compliment in a way. It's okay to make mistakes. I still love you. You're good intrinsically, but you did something that's not so good. And in this way, they're not risk averse because they understand, if I make a mistake, I could survive it. And this is something that children need to be taught. I used to ask, not every day, I used to ask my children three questions quite often when they came home from school. I used to ask them, first of all, did you do any good today? Did you do something good today? I want to think, what does it mean to do good?
I like that.
That's number one. Number two, did you ask a question today? Question, you have to question life. You have to ask things. But number three, and I think this is perhaps the most important, but not always the easiest to answer, did you make any mistakes today? Wow. And if you did, I'd like to talk to you about them. Because I wanted my children to know that every human being is capable of great things, but also capable of making mistakes and capable of messing up.
That's great. I love that.
And capable of messing up. And you need to have enough intrinsic self-worth to know that that doesn't affect your essence. You're as good as you always were. But yes, you have some learning to do. And these are learning experiences. And this itself gives a child a lot of confidence that they can go through life. Because as I say, we all do make mistakes. And it's really those that are able to not so much rationalize them, but certainly basically live with them and grow from them. Those are really, and these children, not everybody gets that technique when they grow up, especially if you have a little bit perfectionist parents sometimes. They expect the greatest from you. You don't want to let them down. You want to live up to expectations. Right. So therefore, you're terribly frightened of making any mistakes. So, and that's a very bad, that's a very negative way to go through
it. It's funny because my wife always says, you know, she always mentions the word effort. You got to put effort.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yes. And that's the greatest thing of all.
It's the effort.
It's the effort you get rewarded for.
Yeah.
Not for being a perfect icon.
It's the effort.
It's the effort for
sure. So basically, don't call the kids, you did good. You did good. You did good because you put effort. If you didn't do good, it's because you didn't put
effort. Doesn't matter the total score.
There's no name. There's no name. There's no this. Either you do put effort, you do good. So teachers are basically, it's a growth mindset. Instead of
growth mindset, exactly. Right. And actually, this is one of the greatest things you can give your children, your child, this ability to see life through this lens. There are two things in life. There's information and there's education. Information is what you go to school for and you get in college. But in education, you will not get there.
Right.
Education is what your parents give you. In college, they won't tell you how to deal with the mistakes of life. What's the true definition of doing good?
Right.
What's your true inner mission in life? It's about information. So there, the score counts.
Right.
But in parenting, it's not the score that counts.
Right.
It's, like you said, the effort. What really how you worked on it, and how you brought the best out of yourself and applied it. to what you were faced with. And this is really what parents can
do. Right. In life, you get the, you get the test and then you get the lesson. In school, you get the lesson and then you get the test.
Yes, that's a very good way of putting it.
Yeah, it's exactly the opposite. Yeah. Right. We get the opposite. We're not prepared for these. We're not prepared for the test.
School, even the best schools, give, in the end, 1 or 2% of your child's makeup.
That's incredible.
98% parents, home, friends as well. But parents and home. That's why it's there should be a calm atmosphere at home and a peaceful atmosphere at home, a happy atmosphere at home, no stress. Another thing also, when problems do come up in life, which children sense, they're very, very perceptive. I remember as a child when something major happened, which was very, very negative, my parents, I had to find out myself. And I thought, oh, are my parents dealing with this? Because if they can't deal with it, then my world is finished. But if children see, even though there's a problem, whatever it is in the family life, but the parents can deal with this in a constructive, calm, trusting manner, this gives the child a lot of comfort. Or if my parents can deal with it, it's not the end of the world, and then I'll be able to deal with it too.
It's amazing how we get, so basically your life is your lesson. We have to demonstrate more and instruct less. And this is one thing thank God I'm able to give a lot of charity today. And it's only because I was sitting in my grandmother's house in Miami Beach, Becky Sack, and may she rest in peace. And I just saw her give charity. And nobody told me to give charity. And she demonstrated it. I did exactly what she did.
And you learn everything from.
I learned from watching.
Personal example. The power of personal example. They'd say you don't, there's a famous saying. You don't raise children, you raise parents.
Wow.
You raise parents. It's the power of personal example. It is so important that children take it in, they watch you. You mold them as you behave, how you deal, what you say, everything. They watch everything like sponges. So really, more than the school, school gives you 2-3% of your makeup. As I say, 98% from your parents. It's in the grandparents, the family. Everything comes from them. And that's why it's so important to set a positive, uplifting, and a good example to your children. They will follow you.
It's funny, Reb Nachman always used to say, first be happy, then be religious. I mean, the whole concept is that when you're losing all these kids that are running away from religion or running away from spirituality because of the lack of happiness.
Yeah, absolutely. An unhappy person is not truly a religious person.
It can't be because it's impossible. Lack of
he's not happy with God. He's not happy with the religion. Not happy with himself. Who knows? Unhappy with whatever.
It's so important because at the end of the day, if we don't have, usually the people's relationship with God mirrors their relationship with their parents. I mean, you see this all the time.
Totally.
They view their creator as if their parents are stingy, they view it. How could my creator give me such a parent? Right. So there's so many
stories.
And
there's not only generosity with money, by the way. Right. There's also generosity with everything that you have. For example, I made a point when my girls were already teenagers. My boys in yeshiva already, but my girls were at home still in high school. And they lived at home and they were teenagers. I made a point when I had my office in Miami Beach in those days. I used to get visited. I was visited by many itinerant traveling rabbis come. And so they used to come and they used to sort of interview me to see what kind of donation I would give them. Meanwhile, I was interviewing them with this candidate. Be with this person, this rabbi, be a good candidate to offer to him to come home to me for Shabbat, be my guest, sleep over and be with me for Shabbat. And in the end, I invited many of these rabbis, ended up staying in my house for Shabbat. And I trained my daughters this way. They were helping my wife. My boys weren't at home. My wife was fine with it, good with it. I trained them. You can share your home, open your home, have people live in it, stay in it for Shabbat. You can serve them. And they today have very, very open homes. And I think that's a result of setting a personal example. You don't have to be frightened. It's okay. You can deal with it. It's okay to have. And it's a good thing. So again, personal example. All the good characteristics that they'll have usually will be from your personal example. So everything we do, we should think, what will my child think about this?
Right, nervousness, this nervous energy, anger, all those.
Yeah.
Nachman says an angry woman can destroy a house.
So can an angry man.
Anger
is very, very bad. I mean, the Talmud says that you lose your whole spirituality. In fact, it says you shouldn't ask advice. If you have a problem, before you take a course of action, you want to ask advice, don't ask advice from an angry person because they lose their seichel from their anger. Anger is very, very bad. And shows that means you're losing yourself. So it's a lack of faith in God as well. God's not running this. I mean, he's made a mess. So. Right. But belief in God, that he's still running the world. So obviously there's a purpose to this. More calm. Wait and see. Wait and see. Always wait and see.
Practical strategies for what do you do with kids that are, you know, the smoking and all kinds. What do you do when you get the stories from the parents? Is it building rapport with the child? Because this is it's a common thing. You know, yes. Peer pressure. There's tremendous peer pressure on children. And how do you deal with peer pressure? How do you deal with
the right self-esteem? The child will, like I used to. That's not for you.
That's really the key.
They'll rise above it. One of my children came home one day from school alone. Used to come on the subway home. Came home alone. So my wife, where's everybody else? And he started got a bit teary. And he said, well, they're all downtown. What are they doing downtown? Why did you come home? He said, they go and they're involved in doing things that they shouldn't be doing at that age. And I said, I refuse to do it. So I came home on my own.
Wow.
He was a little bit teary. We spoke with him about it. I said, you did the right thing. I'm very impressed.
Right.
It should be called self-esteem. So again, good self-esteem, you won't feel so much the peer pressure. It's not for me. Another thing, also a technique I gave my children. People get confused today, especially in society. What is the difference? They get confused that it is average and that is normal. They think because the average child smokes and does all kinds of things, so therefore my friends are doing it all. You know, they come home 5 o'clock in the morning after a night out, a wild night out. Oh, my friends do it. People think because it's average, it's normal. But I explain to my children, it may be average, but it's not normal. That is not normal behavior. This helped. That was
what is normal today?
Normal today.
That's the question.
Normal today is. That's a very good question. And normal today is the example you set your children, and that they should through your positive example they should feel that they've had a happy upbringing, a calm, connecting spiritual upbringing, connected to God. They have confidence that God's always going to be there for them. One of my parents was a very big warrior, and that impacted me because I thought, can I really? If it's so bad, she's worrying. Can I rely on God? You shouldn't project your worries on your children. So again, there are techniques you can do that the good upbringing is one where they won't feel that they're lacking anything from their home life that they have to complement it despite peer pressure. And another thing is, one of my daughters was asked once by somebody, well, why, what, you're more of a party person, your nature is, why did you grow up as well as you did? She said, I could never do it to my father.
Wow.
I could never do that to my father. I couldn't do it.
The royalty thing is, I really love that. I think that's a big thing. I mean, it's a major goal, but if you think about that, you're royalty.
Absolutely.
You know,
it sets you right up. And therefore, the peer pressure is less. I wouldn't say there's not peer pressure. It's less peer pressure.
Correct.
There's less pressure.
But your identity is there.
Your identity is there. It's just not for me. It's not like you said. That's why I said to my kids, I never had to discipline them. Not once was I had to raise my voice. This is not for you.
Right.
And by the way, you're going back to that self-esteem. Correct. So what would you do if your child, you find out your child is involved in these things? You have to have a heart-to-heart with your child. Where did you get the urge from? Where does this come from? Why do you feel you need this? Why do you feel, is there something lacking? What I'm giving you and bring you, is there something lacking? So you know, you become vulnerable yourself. You show up, you talk openly because one-on-one, you open. Let them feel that they have the confidence, you have confidence in them, you can run up to them. And you have to give the guidance. If it's peer pressure, you have to get around that. If it's simply, I wasn't thinking, I wasn't.
Right.
Okay. Whatever it is, you have to be there for them. You have to always have love for them. Never, ever ostracize them. However bad it is, try not to ostracize them. They have to have a place in your family. I personally know that the Rebbe once told a mother to ask one of the Rabbonim, who's an expert in this, what she should do about our children who are not growing up in the proper path. This lady is known to us. And he told her, he said, whatever you do, the world's a very big world out there. Don't ostracize your child. They have to feel that they have a place in your home, place in love. Some of these issues they work out themselves, but always make them feel that you love them. They have the intrinsic worth, but they're making a mistake. They're making a mistake, and let us work it through together. The worst thing you can do is when you have a child that comes home from school one day, and this is applicable to this as well, and the mother got a telephone call from school, your child, Charlie, was acting up again today. You know, if one more time, he's out of school. because he's a child that has ADHD, whatever it is. He can't sit and still. So if the mother screams at the child, oh, again, I've told you, didn't we make up, you're not going to act up in school, then now he has not one problem, because he can't sit still. He's got two problems. He's got a screaming mother, an angry mother, and he's got the problem he can't sit still in school. The way to handle this, smoking it and acting out the children, whatever it is, the way to do it is, I heard today that there was this issue at school. Even though I love you dearly, we should talk this through. In other words, you're good, but you did something that was
right. Separate good.
Separate the person from you. Yes, but you have to talk it through. Talk, communication. If your children if you're openly communicating with the children, even when you're young, and you treat them as adults as well, not treat them as they speak to them, I should say. You can't treat them so much as adults in your guidance, but certainly you talk to them as if you're on one-on-one with them. You're talking to them as if they're an adult. You're a confidant, so to speak. Then they have confidence to come back and talk to you, and they'll tell you why or how this happened to them, and you'll have communication. Communication means already right. You're on the same page, but they're reading a different line, but that's much easier to solve.
And Chassidus speaks about, a lot of Rav Nachman speaks about, even before you have the child, to have the proper thoughts while you're having even that's where it really starts.
It starts
before the beginning of conception, you really have to recognize you're carrying a very special holy seed.
A part of God. It's a part of God.
It's so important.
And in all these things as well, I forgot to mention as well, where there's another word. You want competence and confidence to give to your child, but how do you get it? Through consistency. It's the three C's. Through consistency. Parents have to be consistent in their outlook, their attitudes, their, I won't say the demands, but how they interact with the children. You mentioned before something about parents who have different religious points of view. And this can cause a family in our community, husband, wife, young children, asked to speak to myself and my wife about a problem. The father had advanced in his Judaic connections and keeping Shabbat, etc. The mother, meanwhile, through no fault of her own, but she had no Jewish education because of her background, whatever. It was too much for her to handle at once. So she still drove on Shabbat. Meanwhile, the father's walking to shul. But she used to drive. She'd go shopping, whatever. Once in a while, she'd come to the synagogue. And for the children, they felt this was, but mommy doesn't keep Shabbat. Why should we keep Shabbat?
Right. You know,
this is already causing a problem.
Well, one child, yes, yeah, one child, no.
So what I said was, I said, listen, you have to explain to the children that there's different ways of keeping Shabbat. Mummy also keeps Shabbat, but she's just not at that level yet. Mm. But she's also a Shabbos keeper. In other words, we're on the same page. We're reading from the same book. It's not all or nothing.
Got it.
It's relative. So in other words, mummy's also a Shabbos keeper. Mummy's also this. Daddy's also this. But he's on this page because of his background, and he grew up such a place, parent, whatever. And daddy grew up this way, whatever. Mm. But they both keep Shabbat. The difference is that mummy's on this level, and slowly... Mm. And they get, and once you have that, it's a commonality. It's in a way of being consistent, really. Children like to see consistency. And that's where being consistent. We keep Shabbat. Yes, mummy doesn't the way daddy does, but they honor and respect Shabbat, yeah.
Beautiful.
So that's a way also. So in other words, you can overcome differences that way by, in other words, having sort of an overall agreement. Or we're on the same page, yes, absolutely, Shabbat, Friday night, Shabbat table, whatever it is, whatever the issues are. However, dad has one way of doing it, mom has another way of doing it, and often they may switch and match, certainly.
Hopefully.
When you have a discussion with your children, perhaps you have, I'm saying, an argument, I found a very good technique. I did sometimes with my wife as well. I found a very good technique is to I said, you know what, I've heard what you said. You've heard what I said. Obviously, there's some gap between us. I want to argue now your point of view. I want you to take my point of view to argue it, and then we'll try from there. And okay. I did this with my children. It worked a dream.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. I'll argue your point of view now and see if you can demolish it. And I never had any problems after that. It was always that they saw right away because they were arguing my point of view. So they verbalized. It wasn't me against them or him or her. It's with your wife, it's the same thing. Or husband. It's actually, it's just about what the truth, what the issue is. Let's get to really what the issue really is.
Right.
And so if you let's reverse the roles. I mean, my wife has like a lawyer in any case, so it's quite enjoyable to argue, debate with her. So, but I find it's a very good technique. But with children also. You take their point of view. Now, okay, now let's switch.
Right.
Table, take switch. Yours, yeah. Now I'm gonna argue from your point of view. I'll argue from. It works a dream.
Wow.
Usually you end up laughing. usually fall on the floor laughing at each other.
Yeah, because again, it's all the personal attacks and the emotions. That's what makes everything.
No. Never personalize it. Never do terrible damage in a marriage, but certainly with children. Never personalize it. The intrinsic worth always has to stay. The belief in them. I believe in you.
Because anytime you're dealing with low self-esteem, people don't want to be instructed on what to do. They want to make the decision for themselves. And you see this in recovery. You see this once they said, I can't even make a decision. So they have to have some skin in the game also. And Absolutely. It makes them feel better about themselves.
Totally.
Beautiful, beautiful. Rabbi, thank you so much for being here. I think you gave us great, great tools. The royalty was the big take for me. You know, if you set that identity, I'm your royalty. And I've been given that. You know, that child to be able to bring forth. It takes such a different perspective. Thank you so much,
Thank
Rabbi.
You so much, Gedalia, and Hashem should be with you and bless you and your good work you're doing.
Amen. And please continue leading the community. And again, we only hear amazing things, Rabbi.
Amen. Thank you, Gedalia.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And thank you to our great technician here.